A team of scientists believe our brains could use quantum computation to solve problems. And what's interesting is I was thinking about this in January, and I realized that perhaps maybe someone was researching it. And sure enough, Trinity College in Dublin, the Trinity College Institute of Neuroscience, TCIN, was studying quantum gravity to explore the human brain and its inner workings. And they found out through their research that quantum brain processes could explain why our brains can still outperform supercomputers. Now you see, computers are binary, ones and zeros, ons and offs. But quantum is everything. It's zero and one, one and one, zero and zero. It's everything all at once. And I believe it could explain why humans have free will. You see, a computer can only do what it's programmed to do. It's like a train on a train track. But we have all the possibilities. We could decide on any possible direction. And I believe that's attributed to quantum computation. We have free will. And that gives us the whole spectrum of possibilities. So that's not proven by science yet. They're still studying it. But I believe that there's something special about how our brain works that's different from our standard computers. Although computers do represent how our brain functions. There's memory, short-term, long-term, persistent storage, processing power. All of us have limitations. There's our intelligence quotient that tells us, you know, what our cognitive max potential could be. And that's even debated. If you study calculus, you may actually score higher on these IQ tests after studying calculus than before. So it's possible to get your IQ, your intelligence quotient, higher than when you first took the test. But there are other limitations that our brains have compared to our peers. For example, some people can remember lots of information. And I'll give you an analogy. I've memorized pi. Pi is 3.1415926535.8. And if you look it up on Google, it'll say 9 because it's rounding up. But that's the number of digits I've memorized. Now, think about VIN numbers on a car. There's 16 digits in a VIN number. 16 characters, rather, because there's letters and numbers. Maybe you can remember those 16 characters. What about two cars? 16 times 2. What about 100 cars? Most of us can't remember all that. But if a phone takes a snapshot of that whole list, or you type it into a computer, surprisingly, or unsurprisingly, we all know that it's going to store it. And it will recall it accurately later, even years later. But for our brains, we have a hard time memorizing a substantial amount of information. And even if we do achieve this memorization through repetition, eventually it gets corrupted and we get it wrong. We start to shift letters and numbers around. We forget details. There's something about how the human brain works that while it's able to be creative, it's not very good at persistent memory, you know, permanent memory, and errorless memory. It's not very efficient. You can only really do one or two tasks at a time without making mistakes, where a computer can do dozens and dozens of tasks. It can remember lots of information. And I'm speaking of binary computers. So I think of our minds as being a little bit more like analog. There was analog computation at one point where you used tools, and while you could solve a problem with them, they weren't very accurate. You couldn't repeat the exact result every single time without error. There would be a little margin of error. So our brains are a little bit like that, but they're not quite analog. There's no gears turning in your brain. Yes, there's proteins forming, neurons. There's something else. And quantum is very fascinating because we found that you can get to a very, very small unit. We can get to quarks. I believe that's even beyond atoms. We've got your neutrons and electrons and protons. We can get very, very small, but there is a limit to what we've been able to discover. And this is relevant to an earlier conversation I had with a coworker about infinity being a condition, not a number. So I was a junior in high school when my math teacher explained to us that infinity is a condition, not a number. So he walked up to the wall and stepped away 10 paces. And he says, I am 10 paces away from this wall. If I were to move over 9 paces closer to the wall and leave the 10th one, and then take the 10th one and divide that by 10 and move over 9 units of that, and so on, repetitively, would I ever touch the wall? And it would seem like you wouldn't, because you never quite go 10 paces, or, you know, divisions. You know, you divide the space by 10, you move over 9. You divide that space by 10, and you move over 9, of whatever that is. It would seem that you would never touch the wall. But on the contrary, eventually you'll get to the smallest unit, which would be a quark, is what we believe at the present. And so you would touch the wall, just like your hands clapping. Your hands never truly touch, because if they did, the molecular structure of them would collide into each other. There is an absolute limit of how close two objects can get within the laws of physics before they blend into each other. So, infinity is a condition, not a number. And so when you get to the smallest units of our physical space, scientists have found that things get a little weird. There are certain laws of physics that are ignored in the quantum, the very small world, where something is everything at once, and it's everywhere at once. And I can't pretend to explain this very clearly. Obviously, the scientists at Trinity College in Dublin would do a better job. But for us lay people, who are not as versed in this science, I'll just put it to you this way. There is a limit to how small you can go. And perhaps in that tiniest size lays the key to everything else that, you know, ties the world together. Maybe we're all connected in some way. And we found with quantum physics that two of these, I forget what they're called, but I guess you could say neutrons or protons, whatever these quarks are, they're tied together. They can actually be influencing each other, even at any distance apart, which is very interesting. It almost gives credence to the secret or believing certain things, perhaps at the very small elements of ourselves, we are influencing matter. But speaking of matter, there's matter, solids, liquids, gases, and of course, if you go into space, plasmas. But there's also antimatter, the opposite of the matter that we have. And when those two matters collide or come in contact with each other, there is an explosion. It's not a good one. Antimatter and our standard matter are not compatible with each other. And it reminds me a little bit of the movie Lucky from Apple TV's series with the cat. Yeah, if you've seen Lucky on Apple TV, remember the two worlds. There was the leprechaun world that was really happy and the unlucky world that was on the opposite. It was a mirror image of the lucky world. And I kind of think of matter and antimatter, real numbers and negative numbers, as the same. That for every positive number, positive infinity, there is a negative infinity. For every atom and molecule and everything that exists, there is an anti-version of it. For a good, there is a bad. For a light, there is a dark. There is a balance. There is a spectrum. And perhaps we're just touching that spectrum. Perhaps there is something beyond the quarks, the quantum. And perhaps that's the other world. Perhaps that's the spiritual world. Perhaps that's the soul. Who knows? But science has at least touched on that. And if we could harness our brain power and correct the limitations it has to be able to do multiple functions at the same time without error, then to think more clearly, just imagine what we could do, especially when we get together. And we're all doing this. If one person could do the work of 100 people mentally, and then you get 100 people to do that, and there's 100 people are doing the work of 1,000, just imagine what we could accomplish. And for some people, that's a little bit much. Throughout history, there have been people who don't like progress. They're skeptical. They're scared of it. They think it's wrong or immoral. Remember, Leonardo da Vinci had to dig up graves to study the human anatomy. And I don't blame him. I don't blame society at the time, because you're digging up somebody's, some loved one up and tearing them apart. It just seems wrong. But there was no one willing to donate themselves to science, so it makes sense. Sometimes there's no easy answer to moving forward. You know, he wanted to fly. People said at the time, if God intended us to fly, he would have given us wings. There has always been resistance to change, and that's a reoccurring theme of my podcast. Change comes with critics. Progress comes with critics. But I do believe that there are greater things that our time does not understand. We're not open to these ideas yet. But someday, it will be commonplace. So don't be too close-minded. Know that the future is hard to understand. It's hard to accept. That's the theme of my podcast. My podcast is all about change and progress, and about the future that is hard to embrace because it's so foreign to our own. Don't get stuck on religion or beliefs, because those beliefs claim to know everything. I'm not challenging your faith. There's a place for it. But don't use it as a way to close yourself off. Some folks in the past thought the world was flat, that the earth was the center of the universe because God wanted us to be the center of everything. They used religion to come up with conclusions that were not specifically written or interpretations that were wrong. Look at where we're at now. We fly, we have computers, we can heal diseases, if particularly Christians who read the Bible. If you say unto this mountain, be thou removed and cast into the sea, and do not have a doubt in your heart, it shall be done. If anything, we're being told to move forward, to declare our intent, and to follow through with humble and sincere, pure intentions. So don't get too hung up on the strangeness of discovery. Discovery is showing you what you didn't know and what really is. And you have to accept reality for what it is. Sometimes we think we know everything, but the universe is a very, very big place. And existence is a very long time. We only occupy a finite span in eternity. When we are alive, we have the power to create life and to take life, to build and to destroy, to think and to write and create and consume, but only for a finite time. There will be a time, as was before our time, that we will be able to do none of these things. Utilize yourself to your full potential for a good cause, not an evil one. I am very proud of the scientists that are studying quantum computation, that are exploring how our brain works, For centuries, for millennia, humans have tried to determine how our mind works. Where's our soul? They've been trying to measure it. In fact, a man in the 1800s once measured in mass, he tried to weigh the mass of someone who was about to be executed before and after to determine that ounce of difference when that soul left the body. Of course, that story is to teach us about bias, and that when you have a bias, you tilt the scales, the ambiguous scales, in the direction that you see what you want to believe. So don't be biased when you're doing your studies. Also, I must remind you, as proud as I am of these scientists that are studying quantum computation in the human brain, we might think this is completely quack in the future. Just as we thought the four femurs were top of the scientific community at one point. They thought blood was bad and they had to drain it out with leeches. Science evolves. It changes. Some things are great ideas and some things are not. So don't get too stuck on the understanding of our time. It will change. It will expand and it will redact the fallacies we develop